TV. TV. TV.
Okay, TV.
A podcast of the television.
You are real up in my face with your voice.
Oh, well,
yeah.
I'll see what I can do about that.
Yeah.
But hey, this is
Happy International Podcast Day.
Woo!
Is that what it's called?
International Podcast Day.
Why have I never heard of this? Is this the first one?
No, there've been several. We did a thing last year for it.
Did I just forget that it happened last year?
I think you did.
And then I forgot that it ever existed.
Mm-hmm.
What are the traditional costumes and new songs of International Podcast Day?
I think they're still working on that part. Plus the feasting. What I don't know how the feasts work.
What's the traditional feasting foods?
I think it's a glass of water and a mint.
You don't need a mint when you podcast.
Yeah, I suppose not.
Nobody can smell you in the mouth.
This is true.
During a podcast.
In any event, for those of you who have never caught this show before, this is normally a program that we do as a benefit, a bonus, a prize for our Patreon subscribers, but in honor of International Podcast Day.
You called it a benefit.
Well,
like it's a disability.
It's not it's not a demerit. They're not being punished with this. So this is our television podcast, and I'm Alonzo Duraldi, and that other guy is Dave White. And
but they know that.
Well, I just want to be, you know, look, this is going out onto, like, iTunes and stuff.
It's going out to iTunes for the people who subscribe to Linoleum Knife.
No, sweetie, it goes out into iTunes in general. So if somebody founds this show because they...
I really like it when you call me sweetie on the podcast.
Because, like, so if somebody who searched Will and Grace or something could just stumble upon this show... Or, God forbid, anyone's actually searching the Inhumans. But we'll be talking about those shows, among others. And
I hadn't considered that, really.
Yeah.
I think of us as the hardcore, insulated little, you know, island of
nothing. That's not how it works. The hardcore young Sheldon fans out there could Google their way to us and we'll need to know who the heck we are.
Don't get ahead of yourself.
I'm just saying, there are other ways that people can get the show besides subscribing to Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema. Or subscribing to us at patreon.com/linoleumknife, because it's International Podcast Day and anything can happen.
No. Anything cannot happen. Here's why. I have been brutally sick.
It's true.
All week.
You've been under the weather.
Like, when I had the actual flu last, you know, winter.
Yeah.
That was not as agonizing as what I went through this week.
Mm. It was a bad week for you.
This was the stomach flu.
Yes.
If you have your choice in flus, like if you're at the flu store and you got to pick one, pick the normal flu where you just are, you know, coughing and sneezing and achy and sweaty.
Well, okay, yes. I don't think people really get to pick. I think I've had worse stomach flus than you had this week, but that's a whole discussion that's really not worth getting into.
We'll have a contest after to decide who had the best stomach flu.
You're right. You get to wear a sash. Here it is, your stomach flu.
Here's the side benefit. I watched so much TV.
It's true.
And I watched really garbagey TV.
Mm.
Because here's what you cannot do when you're sick.
Concentrate.
Focus on Ken Burns, the Vietnam War.
No. That is not sickbed entertainment.
I did watch the first hour of Ken Burns, the Vietnam War, this week. I'm behind. They're already, like, the finale airs this weekend.
Yeah.
So I'm catching up. But, that's a lot of information.
That's a commitment.
When your head is spinning around.
Mm.
Although I will say this, my favorite advertisement came. My favorite commercial came during Ken Burns, the Civil War, even though it was on PBS.
I was
Because,
going to say.
PBS has little ads.
Oh, right. Sponsored by, yeah.
Yeah. Bank of America for Ken Burns, the Vietnam War. We at Bank of America support the blah, blah, blah of Ken Burns. If I remember my history lessons properly, weren't the youngins trying to blow up banks and stuff during the 60s, such as Bank
Bank
of
of America,
America?
that does ring a bell, yes. And I'm sure they had nothing to do with, American interests overseas or
Yeah. What is,
colonialism or any of
it
that
makes
stuff.
me very uneasy. Like, I'm watching this documentary now with my arms folded.
It's funny. I remember there was a period where somebody was talking about how, like, you can't trust any of the news channels because they're all owned by, GE
Right.
or, Disney or whatever,
Yeah.
and how you need to, go to something like, PBS. And
Right.
so I watch a show that's on PBS, and the first thing is like, brought to you from, thanks to a grant from ExxonMobil. And I
Yeah.
was like, nope,
Yes.
nope, I'm out.
How? Who can I trust?
I think we're down to democracy now. That's it. They're the only ones who are keeping it 100% real. I believe in them. They need some flash and pizzazz to keep me watching, but I trust them.
I decided this week that I trust Maury
God.
and the doctors and the talk
Is the
and the
doctor's
real.
only to be watched while you're sick? Is
I
that how that
don't think.
works? Is it
Here's
kind of
what I've
interactive
only.
television?
Okay, so I watched the doctors. By the way, you guys, I feel much better today.
Yes, you do. You left the house and everything.
I left the house this morning for the first time in 6 days.
Oof.
And that little running ongoing joke about, oh, Dave White's a
I
shut-in.
wasn't even going to bring it up this time, but.
Let me tell you something. When you have actually been shut in for a week because of illness, you start to think bad thoughts about your life, about everyone in your life, about the world and its direction. It's not good.
Well, this was the week to have bad thoughts about the world and its direction, but that's another story.
But every week is that week now.
Yeah.
But
But nothing cures that like a trip to Target.
so I got up, I got, went to Target this morning with you. I felt good, and I didn't feel like I had to be within 10 seconds of a bathroom.
Well, all right.
So anyway, I watched the doctors for the first time ever this week. That show is bonkers.
That's my understanding.
Dr. Oz seems measured and, peer researched, peer reviewed compared to the doctors. The doctors are like, coming up. Is your nose in danger of falling off your head? Maybe. Stay tuned.
My only encounter with one of the
Coming
doctors.
up. Could you be dying as you watch this show?
Maybe.
Maybe.
My only encounter with one of the doctors was the last time I did the Avon walk for breast cancer. One of the lady doctors from the doctors was there.
I don't think those are real doctors.
She said she was.
I think they're all PhDs
It's like Dr. Laura,
I think they're all PhDs in like sports medicine or something.
Anyway, she did the walk, but she did the walk with a camera
You know,
crew.
they're PhDs in like fitness education. Like,
They're osteopaths or something.
I don't think they're actual doctors.
One's got a PhD in political science, but
It all seemed so wacky while I was watching it. I was thinking, I would do maybe the opposite of everything they tell me to do on this show. Like, you went to the grocery store for me this week many times
Yes.
to bring me home bananas, rice, applesauce, and bread that would be made into toast.
Right. Because I'm the best husband ever.
Dry toast. With a little sprinkling of, like, sea salt on the dry toast. Like, that's how you choke that down.
I was on that diet for a lengthy period of time, and I started doing things like putting the applesauce on the toast.
Anyway, because we live in a bougie-as-hell area of Los Angeles.
With a foofy grocery store.
Although, we are basically the slums of Beverly Hills. I mean, like, there's we live at the bottom. We live at the base of the Hollywood Hills. Now, Hollywood Hills, if you don't live in Los Angeles, are where the famous and rich tend to hide in big houses.
There are also some big, nice houses in our neighborhood, but they are on the other side of Santa Monica Boulevard, and they all have very high fences.
Surrounded by 20-foot hedges.
Yeah.
And you think I'm kidding when I say 20-foot hedges.
No, for real.
They are as tall as trees.
Yeah.
The hedges.
Privacy.
Anyway, so our Gelson's is, our grocery store, it's called Gelson's. It's exhausting. And they sell the newly published very first issue of Gwyneth Paltrow's Goop magazine.
Yes. You thought print was dead, but no.
No, it is.
It just got gooped.
It just got deader. You bought it and you brought it home for me just for my amusement.
Because you were sick. I knew it would entertain you.
That magazine needs to go on the doctors. The walking, talking, sentient version of that magazine. Which actually, in reality, is not Gwyneth Paltrow. Even though she's on the cover covered in mud.
Right.
With a very cheeky caption that says, Earth to Gwyneth. Just get it?
Yeah.
In that magazine is like, crystals will heal you. I'm not making this up. Big article about how crystals and their energy, and you power them by the moon? And you...
Did they talk about jade eggs into your intimate areas?
Yes.
Oh, brother.
Yes, the jade egg in your area is,
despite everyone telling them,
still a thing.
Hey, Gwyneth, those things are porous.
In the magazine, it says, yeah, get one of these and put it right up inside. It'll cleanse you and give you energy, and then you can power it with the moon.
Is she still...
Everything gets powered by the moon. Put the crystal on your forehead, and the moon power through the crystal on your forehead powers your skull.
Is she still steaming places?
Probably.
Oh, brother.
She's going to die of something.
I'm worried.
I'm worried for her. So anyway, that's the kind of stuff that I bet they would be talking about on the doctors on all the other days.
All right.
The 364 other days that I am not watching the doctors. Because one was enough.
Yeah.
One was enough to make me afraid of my own propensity to believe the things I hear doctors on TV saying.
The goop doctors.
Yeah. Not about it.
No.
A very sad episode of Maury.
Oh. Was he not the father?
No, he was.
Oh.
And he was an old man.
Oh.
And he had a 38-year-old daughter. And he had told her her entire life that he wasn't her father. And he did this to justify abandoning her. And when she found him again, he was like, I'm still not your father. Guess what? The father.
Okay, why
and
would you go on Maury?
Free trip to New York.
No, but you know you're going to... Your web of lies is going to unravel. If you've been telling this woman for 38 years, I'm not your father. Oh, what? I can go on Maury? Sure, why not? What could go wrong?
I think that what happens on Maury is that you already know what's up before you go.
Are you suggesting that they're acting?
I'm suggesting that folks who are not actors want a free trip to New York are willing to pretend.
People aren't legitimately running in a circle backstage and then back out on stage again.
To learn things. That's my favorite part. When people run the whole distance.
That should be like an Olympic event.
I love Maury. I love watching Maury. There's It's more, Maury is more fun than Jerry Springer. Jerry Springer was also pretty good this week.
Jerry Springer's still on?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yeah, Jerry's still on.
You're sure it wasn't just a rerun?
There's some new guy, some British guy now, who used to be a chef. And I'm blanking on his name. It's like Robert something something. I'm not going to remember it. And I'm not going to go look it up. He was like a former chef, and now he's doing a Maury Jerry kind of thing, except he just talks to people. Well, he's going to fail unless he starts letting people fight.
We have so many channels.
Yeah.
Why are you watching, like...
Because those are the good shows.
God.
When you're sick, when you're feeling sick and you're thinking bad thoughts about your life and everyone in the world, these are shows that comfort you.
Did you start giving serious thought about maybe going to ITT Technical Institute?
You know.
Or perhaps getting a personal injury lawyer?
I could learn computers. And you know I need to.
Couldn't hurt.
I could learn computers and go out and get a job doing computers.
Yes.
Which is a far more sophisticated position in the world than the one I currently occupy.
Hello, I'm Dave. I'm here to do computers.
Because now all I walk around saying is, hello, I'm Dave. I'm a film critic. Does anyone need their film critic? Because it's what I do. I'm a film critic.
You'd be surprised the people who cold call me to critic their films.
Oh, it's been happening to me, too.
Yeah, it's like, this is not
people,
a...
People have been routinely lately friending me on Twitter. Following me on Twitter.
Just and then, so they can...
Just so they can ask me to review their film. And I'm like, that ain't the way it goes.
Yeah.
This is not... I'm real busy.
If your movie's not opening theatrically, like, I'm not just going to review it to review it. Like,
send
that's not
DVD
how this works.
To me. No, 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 no. I... Because if I said yes, and you said yes to that, we would have stacks of them. Oh,
we'd do nothing
and
else.
We would do nothing but review. And where would we... We're not going to write a review and put it somewhere where there's no... This film has no distribution.
Yeah, the rap does not want to cover your movie that is a concept in your mind at this point.
Well, it's a finished
product. I mean, it's a finished product, but still, it's not... There's no way that it's getting to the public, you know.
All right, so I'm going to roll through the rest of the garbage that I watched before we get to the actual...
Fall TV.
Fall TV. So I watch that guy who's the chef, and he's boring. It's Robert something, and he is like Mr. Fitness too. Like I looked him up on the internet just to see who he was, and he's a chef from England who is all about like working out and stuff, and he has like 19 abs.
Oh brother!
All the pictures of him on the internet are him with no shirt on. He's cooking with no shirt on in most of the pictures.
What? Did he learn nothing from your pancake incident?
Next to other chefs. Well, see, here's the thing. When you're this guy and you're cooking with no shirt, and you get your belly too close to the frying pan, you'd kind of have to really push your belly into the stove to get the frying pan to touch it.
Mm.
When you're me...
Your belly's just there.
When your belly is... voluptuous. The frying pan has a smaller distance to travel before it touches your skin and sears it to a deep-fried golden crunch. So, in conclusion, don't be fat and shirtless while you're making things in the kitchen. But you can be this chef muscle man. Whatever his name is. There are pictures of him cooking alongside other chefs, and he's not wearing a shirt.
Did you watch
it? It's good. He should never wear a shirt. Like, he should conduct his talk show with no shirt on. And it wouldn't matter that he's only talking to people and being kind of nice to
just
them.
Just to exert dominance?
Everyone would just be like, ooh.
Did you watch any judge programs?
I watched, like, 3 minutes of Judge Judy, but the people were boring and they weren't, you know.
Amy Schumer wasn't there.
No, Amy Schumer was not sitting there in the audience. But I do love Judge Judy. The other judges I don't care about.
Yeah.
There are too many.
It's true.
There are too many judges. What I would like is a crossover kind of drag race judge show.
So, like, Judge Michelle Visage or something?
Like, if there could actually be a judge, a real judge who gets a judge show but is also a drag queen.
Oh, okay.
Who could that be? Who would that be? We don't know. Hmm. Do we know any judges? I mean, we know some gay lawyers. But could you be just a lawyer and get your own judge show?
This sounds like the there's a joke on this season.
If anyone's listening and has the ability to make a television show a reality, I just gave you a free idea.
But here's the thing. Judges dress really dowdy. So you basically have a drag queen with a black cloak on and maybe a little lacy collar.
No. Like a really great cloak or a caftan or whatever. Okay.
Like, this reminds me, there's
like a disco drag queen judge.
There's a joke on this season of BoJack Horseman where his friend Todd, who always comes up with really terrible business ideas, decides that the way to get kids not to be afraid of the dentist would be to have the dentist dress as clowns. And
So then
they wind up with clowns teaching dentists how to be clowns and dentists teaching clowns how to be dentists. This whole drag queen judge sip thing seems like it's somewhere in that limbo where one would have to...
We need a real judge with judge qualifications.
So, like, basically, if we could take Wapner but give him a full makeover and a wig on him and give him some name like Judge Shasta Delight or whatever.
Right.
Okay. That's a terrible idea for a show.
No, I think it's a very good idea. I think a judge drag queen show.
That's great. What else you got?
Well, Wendy.
Ah.
Some things are going down.
Oh, was that this week?
Uh-huh.
Oh, my. I thought we talked about that. All right.
Nope. All right. So, this happens on Tuesday. Now, unlike these other shows that I only watch while sick, if you're a regular listener to LKTV, you know that I'm devoted to my lady,
Wendy Williams.
She's my everyday thing.
And she devotes a good chunk of each day's show to celebrity gossip.
Hot Topics.
Hot Topics.
And she comes out on Tuesday and she says, it's kind of weird doing Hot Topics when you're the Hot Topic. Little did I know, or little did really anyone know, there has been one of the tabloids has been following... And I mean, doing investigative journalism.
Was this like the Daily Mail or?
Something like the Daily Mail. That's what it's, I think it's the Daily Mail. They spent a year following Wendy Williams' husband.
Journalism.
Around. Now, how do you pick him? How do you say, let's go find out what we can find out about this guy?
They were probably intimidated to get off the Stedman beat.
There is nothing going on with Stedman.
A few broken fingers. They're like, okay, fine. We'll follow Wendy Williams' husband. Never mind.
There is literally nothing going on with Stedman. Stedman does whatever job it is that he does.
Yeah, you think.
And then he goes home and he's like, what can I do for you today?
Look,
m'lady.
In the same way that like...
that's all that happens.
George Nader's career got sacrificed on the altar of keeping Rock Hudson a secret. You know, I'm sure it's like...
Sure.
I think
that's what's going down?
That's what I think is going down.
No. Because we would have known it by now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
She is...
Is she too powerful?
She's too powerful.
I don't think she is.
She is the queen of all media.
I don't think she's too powerful. In any case... They followed Wendy Williams' husband around for a year. And it turns out that there's another woman. And not just another woman. Another woman that he's been other womaning for 10 years. Who lives 9 miles away from them in a house that they own.
That Wendy co-owns.
Wendy and the husband own that house.
Mm.
But her name and his name is inside the mailbox. You know, so the mail carrier knows who lives at that address.
Right.
Their names are on little stickers inside the mailbox.
Well,
and
she lives there, and sometimes so does he.
So here's what we have to discover. Here's what we have discovered. Someone has a French arrangement.
Mm.
Now she, you know, back in the day, like
she Wendy,
16 years ago, she Wendy. She wrote that her husband cheated on her after the kid was born.
Hmm.
And she forgave him and they went on. And what's interesting to me about the way she conducts Hot Topics each day is that she regularly talks about the people, the celebrities who are cheating and getting caught cheating. Mm-hmm. And she always rags on them for getting caught.
Right, not for the cheating itself.
Not necessarily for the cheating. She also takes a more pronounced interest in couples who seem to tolerate open affairs, other sexual partners, mm-hmm. that kind of thing.
And this is clearly more than just that. I mean, this is
another family.
Yeah, this is an intimate relationship.
Yes. And so,
and she knew about all this.
And just, well, she talked. Here's what she did on Tuesday. She showed her big giant diamond wedding whatever ring,
mm-hmm.
and she said, "I stand by my man. Don't believe the hype." And that was the end of it.
Hmm.
But then. And so after that day, I thought, okay, well, here's the thing. I know this now in my head. In my head, I know what's happening. What's happening is that he's been involved with another woman for 10 years, and he's in love with her. He's also in love with Wendy Williams.
And they have a kid.
And they have a kid, and she is in love with him. And she has, somewhere along the way, said to herself, we'll just be French. You get to have your mistress, and you get to go stay with her a couple nights a week, and that's fine.
Just, I can pour myself into my work and not feel guilty about neglecting.
I get you on the weekends.
Yeah. We raise our child together.
We raise our child together.
At least until he goes to college.
You come home to me. I'm number one.
Right. What's the line on...
And I say French. It's not just France, but that's the joke, right?
Yeah.
That the French guys all have mistresses.
They're so sophisticated about
it. The beginning of one of our favorite Christmas movies, La Bouche.
Mm-hmm.
There's the scene where the old husband has died. And the wife is at the funeral, and his cell phone, which is somehow still in his suit pocket,
starts ringing,
and everyone's like, what do we do? And she says, oh no, I forgot to tell his mistress.
I forgot to tell his wife, actually. I think maybe she's the mistress, or
one of the
something
other,
like that.
Something
yeah.
like that. Anyway.
Well, there's also, you know, there was just a line on... We were talking about American Horror Story Cult, where you have Billy Eichner as the gay guy with the wife, and the wife basically says, you know, he gets to go to Detroit one night a week, and as long as he doesn't embarrass me and take his Truvada, then it's fine.
Right. So, it's... Honestly, for me, now, it's a non-issue.
Yeah.
As a viewer, and someone who thinks she's great, my thoughts are, well, you know what? You got it all together the way you need it? That's fine.
Yeah, it's not like she tut-tuts other people who have similar arrangements. That would be hypocritical. But
she gives them the face. But
sure,
it's,
but she doesn't like get on some sort of moral high ground,
no,
you know, about a thing that she herself
has
participated
in. That's not been my understanding of her position about this stuff. On the show, is there like a parade of people walking by her apartment right
with
now?
No shirts on? Yes,
glomping and stomping past.
No idea. Maybe one of them is the British chef with the talk show.
It could be. Okay, but then here's what happens the next day, or rather, 2 days later. I think I'm being spoken to in code. I've become a detective now.
Oh, good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I think she's speaking to us in code now because she won't revisit the topic.
Mm-hmm.
But now she's talking about other people and saying things. And after saying things, giving that look into the camera like, you see what I mean? And she has a very specific glance that she gives to the camera.
I know that glance from when she talks about people being gay without saying they're gay.
She'll just stare directly into the camera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like Gene Seberg.
And is quiet for a few moments before moving on to the next thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what she does.
Yeah,
and
she breaks the fourth wall.
That's a regular thing that she does. And it is very much a fourth wall break without doing it.
Right.
All right. So here's the first thing. She's talking about Usher. Now, Usher's been running around giving everybody herpes.
Allegedly.
Allegedly. Including some guy.
Yes.
Allegedly. And she reads a quote from Usher's mother, who used to be his manager and is no longer his manager.
You really want your mom to come out and talk to the press when you're in the middle of a herpes scandal.
But here's what his mother said. We worked too long and too hard to build this career to let this take it all down.
Hmm.
And so she says that, and she looks into the camera. Now, that's a quote from Usher's mother.
Right.
Wendy Williams did not say this.
Correct.
But Wendy Williams is reading the quote on the air and then looking into the camera. Same segment. Somebody's getting a divorce, blah, 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 having to move. And she digresses and she says, don't you hate moving, to the audience? She's like, oh, the boxes and the everything, and they steal from you, the movers, and the things get broken. And she says, I hate moving. I'm not moving. Stare into the camera. And I'm like, Wendy Williams is speaking to me personally in private code about her life. I'm a detective. If you need me to detect something for you, just give me a call. I will detect things.
You are turning into Jimmy Stewart in Rear Window. You've been in this apartment for too long. Okay, we have to talk about real TV now.
Fine. Less interesting.
I know. But Will and Grace is back.
Oh, that's right.
You didn't even have that on your list, did you?
I did not even have it on
my
list.
Oh, brother. We have to talk about Will and Grace, because it is gay law that we discuss this.
It is. And we're gays.
So it's back with the main four players, and there's they toss in an It Was All a Dream joke at the very beginning to sort of paper over the last season or so, at least how it ended.
Right.
And
which was good for me because I didn't know anything about that.
I had a vague notion of it. I think I may have watched that episode. I don't even remember. Little background.
What is this episode about?
This episode is about, Grace has moved in with Will because she's getting over her divorce. They're all still shell-shocked by the election. Will is writing angry letters every day to his congressman, who happens to be an attractive gentleman. And Karen, who is buddies with Melania Trump, gets Grace a gig redecorating the Oval Office. So both Will and Grace go to the White House without telling each other because they're kind of embarrassed about their collusion with the Republican Party. And wackiness ensues? Question mark. Little background. Neither of us were ever big fans of this show. A lot of gays love it, and I've never found it all that funny, and I find that its portrayal of gay is so, I don't want to necessarily call it retrograde, because it's not like these people don't exist, but it's such a narrow slice of boring, basic, urban gay guy. and with active sort of snobbery about other types of gay guys.
Right.
Or just ways of being a gay person in the world, not to mention lesbians.
Remember when that guy who went on to become the screenwriter of Capote, what's that
actor's
name?
Yeah, Dan...
something.
The guy who wrote Capote, yes.
Remember when he was...
He was Will's boyfriend for a while.
Kept calling him fat?
Yeah, he was supposed to be a bear.
They kept calling him fat, and I was like, that guy weighs like 135 pounds.
Soaking wet.
What is happening on this show? I don't even understand what's being spoken of right now.
Yeah.
Anyway, go on.
Anyway, so just watching this pilot, or, you know, for the reboot, it was sort of like, okay, the real triumph of Will and Grace is that gay people got to have their own hacky sitcom. Like, you know, we are part of the world, you know, and it's the joke I always make is like, if you think that TV isn't doing a good enough job representing your life, like talk to a nurse or a district attorney sometime, you know, they're used to TV getting their lives completely wrong. It's just more of a recent phenomenon that they can get, you know, queer lives completely wrong. And, you know, our friend Guy Branum wrote this piece for Mike about how Jack is now representing something we've never seen on TV before, which is an aging twink. And if the subsequent episodes sort of dive into that direction and do it interestingly, great. But I don't know. I know so many gays who love this show unironically, and I've just never meant ish to me.
Okay, so I'm not fully with you.
Okay.
Now, in the 90s, I was much more hostile to Will and Grace than I am right now. For a few reasons. In the 90s, as far as TV went, it was kind of the only game in town.
Well, yeah.
And I resented that it was the only game in town. You know, there were one-off gay characters here and there on other shows. I remember the big Melrose Place. Someone was supposed to be gay on Melrose Place.
Yeah.
I never watched Melrose Place.
Matt.
So, yeah.
AKA Doormat. I mean, there had been some, you know, there was that Brothers show on Showtime.
Like a sitcom about gays, et cetera.
Front and center.
Anyway. It came along in 1998. I was 33 years old in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
And
you were married to me.
I was already with you. And here's what else I was already. I had already experienced the new queer cinema.
Right.
I had already seen, you know, lots of Fassbender films. I had already seen Bruce LaBruce's No Skin Off My Ass and Super 8½ and, you know, whatever else. I had already...
You read David Venerovich's Close to the Knives.
I'd already read Close to the Knives. I had already been through the queer punk rock scene, homocore zine and Planet... Matt's zine. What is it? Outpunk? Sorry,
yes.
Outpunk. Thank you, Matt. I'm sorry. And Riot Girl had already happened, and you know,
none of which was ever going to make it to a sitcom.
Everything about my queer life,
right,
was on a different track into a different part of the solar system.
Sure.
Than the stuff that informed the existence of Will and Grace.
Right. But that's, and like, so, that's like saying, you know, Good Times is not scratching my Amiri Baraka itch.
I understand. Yes, exactly. Exactly. But because I had already experienced all that stuff, I was in no need of Will and Grace.
Right.
And when I saw it, I thought, the hell is going on here? Like, who are these? I don't know. I don't know these people.
Right.
I mean, I do. But I don't hang with these people. And so...
You don't want to spend half an hour of your week with them every week.
And it's not... And it wasn't a... It was back then, it certainly was for me. Back then, it certainly was a, I'm too good for this show situation. Like, in my head.
Right.
I would think to myself, No. This is for straight people.
Yeah.
This is the Birdcage, only it's a sitcom. This is for heterosexuals who need, you know, gays that they can feel comfortable with, you know, funny clowny gays.
Right.
That they can hang with.
And make them feel progressive.
At a distance, yeah. It didn't mean anything to me other than I felt like it was beneath me. Now, having it back...
Mm-hmm.
I'm glad it's back.
Really?
Yes. One, for the reasons that Guy wrote about in his piece.
Mm-hmm.
I like the idea of the aging twink. I love a sitcom. I love the idea of a sitcom that is about a, what we call a twunk.
Right.
And the, I didn't make up that word. That's out in the world. That word exists outside of this house. And I like that we're seeing people, a sitcom about now, two gay guys and their two female friends who are all people in their late 40s, early 50s, or even older than early right. 50s now. Because that's not a young person's show. I still don't respond to it really as a comedy because the one-liners sort of comedy, the multi-cam sitcom kind of comedy, again, it's not where I am.
Although, really. You liked One Day at a Time.
One Day at a Time is funny to me.
Well, exactly. But I'm saying, One Day at a Time is a multi-camera sitcom that made they gave me hope for the multi-camera sitcom. Because I hadn't responded to one in a long time. I don't respond to this one. And I'm not unaware of the importance of Will and Grace on the cultural landscape. I mean, I get it. Yes, they're the, that's how Joe Biden wrapped his mind around gay marriage.
Like, that's good for him.
I understand all that stuff. Yes. And I'm look, I'm glad it existed. I'm always in favor of visibility. What drives me crazy is other gays who insist that this is not only sort of landmark important television, but that
It is landmark television.
Right.
Whether we were into it or not.
Yes. Let me finish.
Okay.
But they also insist that it's funny, entertaining, relevant to their and our lives television.
To their lives, sure. No one's forcing you to laugh at Will and Grace. No one's forcing you to say, yes, this show is landmark and important to me personally.
Maybe we have different Facebook gays.
We do.
A lot of my Facebook gays, if you are not completely 100% on board for this, you know, then it's your problem, gay, well, and why are you bringing down the side?
How are they going to know?
Because other Facebook gays have complained about the show.
Oh. Well, see, no one asks me my opinion about Will and Grace on Facebook.
Ah.
Because no one care, like, no one I know cares. And so
I mean, I had to care about that show because I was at the
Advocate. I'm only having this conversation with you right now because we're doing a podcast.
Right. Yeah. But I mean, I was at the Advocate. I was at the Advocate from 2000 to 2006. And so, like, you know, the puppy episode of Ellen had already happened. Will and Grace, you know, I was there for the beginning of Queer as Folk on Showtime, that kind of thing.
Yes.
But like, Will and Grace was always kind of a big deal. Like when Dan Futterman, that was his name.
Dan Futterman.
When Dan Futterman was on Will and Grace, he got the cover, you know.
Right.
We did a whole big to-do for when the show ended, because that was a landmark moment. You wrote about how you didn't like it. And, you know, we couldn't get Sean Hayes to be in the magazine that entire time.
Because he wasn't out.
Because he wasn't out.
That's
like,
correct.
As Karen said to Jack when he said that his mother didn't know he was gay, what is she, headless?
Right.
So, you know, I had to think about Will and Grace more than I wanted to think about Will and Grace for my job. And now, again, if it weren't for this podcast, I don't know that I would be watching this new one, but I am.
No, I would be watching it because I want to see, and I'm going to continue watching it, because I want to see how they engage with the culture. I want to see, because this episode was all about how do you deal with Donald Trump.
Right.
Now, the jokes were, for me,
hacky.
Stale jokes about him having Cheeto-colored skin and things like that. Like, very sort of soft jokes that...
Low-hanging fruit.
That have been, I've heard already.
Yeah.
Yeah, out in the world. But again, this show, as evidenced in the late 90s and early oohs, is not actually for me.
Yeah.
It's for other people who need it.
It's like all of Logo. When Logo started,
and I no longer feel superior to it.
Okay.
Like I did back in the day, because I've learned as I've aged that I'm not actually superior to anything. I just have weird taste in everything.
You know, I one of the questions that Guy Branum asks in his piece is like, in a world where, in a TV landscape that gives us Maura Pfefferman, what are we going to get out of Jack McFarland?
I don't know.
And I have not watched the new season of Transparent yet, but having watched the first three, I have to say that show to me feels like I am getting schooled on what's happening in the world that I'm not around. Like,
right.
We have trans friends, but we don't necessarily get as all the nitty-gritty out of them in conversation the way that I feel like Transparent is laying it out.
We do from Jack.
Okay, we do. He's
Jack lays it on the line.
He is CNN with the constant updates. But for the most part, I feel like these are conversations.
Does Jack listen to us?
I don't know.
Hey, Jack, if you're listening, thank you.
Get well soon. One of the things, though, you know, that I like about any, you know, when people talk about the point of diversity in film and TV, I love feeling like I'm hearing conversations that aren't happening around me. You know, and Transparent gives me that feeling. And Will and Grace plays it so safe and so bougie that it doesn't seem to me like anybody who isn't, that there's anything that non-gay people are learning apart from like the most surfacey, obvious stuff. I mean, is that just my perspective or is that valid?
Well, I think in general, you are full of baloney and horse feathers.
Can the balloon juice.
I said this before, think what you want, respond to it the way you want. No one is judging you unless you come out and make a show of, or make it a point of pride that you're not into it because you're too good for it. That's what I did in the late 90s, and it sure was fun.
But now you're over it.
But now I'm over it.
Okay, fine.
I think this show should exist, and I'm glad it does. I know it will still have nothing to do with me.
But
that's fine.
I mean, you know, I was just talking to on Pop Rocket. I was telling Karen Tongson, like, one of the reason I always liked L Word more than I liked Queer as Folk was because L Word wasn't about me. And so L Word.
Queer as Folk was also not about us.
Right. But Queer as Folk was at least tangentially, you know, in our universe, whereas L Word was so completely a separate experience.
See, I'm going to disagree with you on Queer as Folk being tangentially related to us, because to me, it is as alien a show as Will and Grace.
Okay.
In terms of our specific lives.
I understand that, but I'm saying ostensibly, let me put it this way. As a gay guy, I knew what was wrong with Queer as Folk that I didn't know about the L Word because I'm not a lesbian.
For example, everything.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I could enjoy the L Word just as a soapy, goofy, you know, show.
Because apparently everything was wrong with the L Word,
of
too.
Of course.
We just didn't care.
Yes, exactly. Ask an actual lesbian. They'll tell you all about it. Now, you erased Kevin Can Wait before I could even watch
it. Here's why. You don't need to.
Thank you for that.
I'm going to tell you.
I appreciate you taking that bullet
from me. I'm going to tell you and everyone what happens right now. They fired the original wife.
Yes.
This is the beginning of its second season. Mm-hmm. And we watched the pilot of season one and chose never to look at it again.
Exactly.
The only reason that we chose to look at it a second time is because they fired the first wife.
So they could bring in Leah Remini.
To make room for Leah Remini. And here's how they did it. Show opens. Kevin James is packing lunches for the kids, sending them off to school. One of the kids goes, I sure do miss Mom. And Kevin James is going through the mail. He goes, oh, me too. Here's a letter from her gym. It's been a whole year, and they still send her letters from this gym. And I keep trying to tell them that she died.
Well, that's some exposition.
Yeah. And then they're like, other kid's like, yeah, it's sad. I sure do miss Mom. And takes the letter from Kevin James's hand, is going to throw it away. He goes, no, there's a coupon in there for a free martial arts lesson. I want to.
Oh.
Joke, because it's a joke.
She died 7 years ago this very night.
and then at the end, the oldest daughter's getting married. I watched this whole episode, by the way.
This is a half-hour episode that ends with a wedding. That's a lot.
Ends with a wedding. Daughter's getting married at the end. And she says at the end, sure wish Mom could be here. Kevin James, yeah, me too. I miss her a lot. Leah Remini's like, hey, you're fat. To Kevin James, you know, things like that.
Right.
Because I'll tell you something. Leah Remini, she's a kicker. Like, she's the new Heather Locklear, I think, in that you bring in Leah Remini and your show is instantly vital. Because she's funnier than Kevin James. She's got better timing. She's got cooler, more sarcastic sort of expressions and ways about her.
She's got zazz.
She is his foil. And That show's going to be on for another 10 years, as yes. long as she stays put.
Probably.
Yeah, because it's terrible, but she's great. Yeah. And he knows it, and that's why the minute she became available, he was like,
let's kill my wife.
Here's the off-camera conversation. They go to dinner. Please, 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 money, 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 money. Please, please, please. We'll just kill off the other one. We don't care. She's not important.
And we will leave you time in your schedule to go do your Scientology show.
That's right. Exactly. And she said, more money. And he goes, okay, 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 okay. That was the conversation.
Speaking of which, have you heard what they've announced possibly for season 3 of her Scientology show?
Nope.
It's going to be about Jehovah's Witnesses.
What does that have to do with Scientology?
It doesn't. But it's going to be about people whose lives were screwed up by the religion and how it's tearing families apart and all this
so
stuff.
So it's just going to be Leah Remini destroys religions?
Yeah.
Oh, that's so good.
I know. Leah Remini, cult buster. I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah, because she's just serious enough for those... for that Scientology show, and she still makes jokes, which yeah. is good.
I know. She knows how to keep it light, but she also knows when to be serious and when to cry, and she has lived it all, so it's not like you can't impugn her background on this, because she went through it all.
Right. She was raised in it just like Elizabeth Moss.
Right.
That's what I learned about Elizabeth Moss last week.
Yep.
But she didn't join it. She was raised in it.
Anyway, elsewhere on CBS, lots of stuff. In addition to killing off the wife of Kevin, we get young Sheldon, a.k.a. The Little Bang Theory, which is narrated by old Sheldon, Wonder Years style. But he's 9 years old, and he's going to high school in East Texas, and he's already, like, a nerd, and he's sort of having to learn how to, you know, not be a tattletale and a general pain in the butt. I don't know.
But then he never does, right? I mean, like, his character on The Big Bang Theory is obnoxious.
I never watched The Big Bang Theory, so I don't really know the scoop there, but...
I've seen it twice. It's not good.
I think, like any prequel, yeah, they're sort of hamstrung into what they can do and how far they can go, because we know what the end result is.
I mean, Big Bang Theory is not good.
No.
I
didn't hate this pilot.
We've been joking about this show for months now. Yes. And the billboards are, I don't know where you live, but we live in Los Angeles where the, you know.
People in show business have fragile egos, so they put billboards everywhere.
The billboards are everywhere for this show, and it's actually been giving me anxiety for this child actor who everything's on the line for this kid.
Who is also in Our Souls at Night, by the way.
Oh, is he really?
Yeah.
Okay.
Premiering on Netflix this weekend.
So, so we watched it. It's a half good and a half irritating.
Yeah, that's about fair.
The good half is the first half, where they kind of show you his home life.
Yeah, the family dynamic. His mother is very protective of him.
He's a 9-year-old atheist science nerd genius. She's a born-again Christian.
Dad's a football coach.
East Texas dad's a football coach at the high school. Brother's a football lunkhead at the high school.
He has a twin sister who can't stand him.
And they do a really good job of building empathy for this innocent little child who is, you know, gifted and doesn't understand his place in the world and is very much afraid of lots of things in the world, doesn't like to go outside because, you know, there's
loud noises
and barking dogs and people who might be mean to me. And, you know, you see from the visual perspective, from his point of view, everything in the world outside looks big and dangerous.
Yeah, there's a lot of fisheye lens going on.
And it's really effectively communicating his anxiety.
Right.
And within the family, he's, you know, bullied a little bit by his older brother and also by his twin sister. Somewhat misunderstood by the father, but not treated badly by the father.
No. And the mother doesn't entirely get him, but would take a bullet for him.
But protects him. Yeah. She is his protector. There's a very sweet scene where she takes him to church, and there's an old lady sitting in front of them who's being, you know, a pain.
Who's exasperated by the fact that he's talking.
Yeah. And the mother, you know, tells her to mind her own business, and then he
leans into her.
Leans his head on his mother's upper arm.
Yeah.
And it's very moving to see this. Like, you really do. They do a really good job of building a warmth and a caring kind of concern and for the well-being of this child.
And it's you know, it's mutual, because, like, the mother's trying to get people to go to church with her, and nobody wants to, and he says he will, and the sister's like, why are you going to church? You don't believe in God. And he says, I believe in Mom.
Yeah. So you start to feel very sort of kind of mushy for this show until he goes to high school for the first day. And he's immediately, like you said, he's a tattletale on other kids who, you know, they're all violating the school handbook because he's memorized it already. And they, you know, the teachers are saying facts incorrectly. And so he calls out the teachers. He calls out the teachers' physical appearances, which seems weird and cruel. And so it doesn't seem to me, unless there's so much, I mean, listen, I don't know this character as an adult, other than the two episodes of the show that I've seen, and the two episodes of Big Bang Theory that I've seen, he's obnoxious. He's obnoxious, he's superior, he's haughty, and he doesn't have human being skills.
So they can't make him warm on this show without undoing their sort of future canon.
Correct. And so I don't know where they're going to take this. I'm not going to keep watching it. It would be nice if we could have if this weren't called Young Sheldon and you could take it in another direction.
Yeah, if it were a show about a kid genius, but who might have the chance of becoming somebody who is both intelligent and empathetic.
That would be an interesting thing. Of course, there'd be less comedy, because the comedy comes when there's insults.
Right.
And that's, whatever.
It is at least it's a single camera show without a laugh track, which is definitely a benefit over Big Bang.
Like, I was under the impression when I sat down to watch this that I was going to just dig my knife and fork into it. But
yeah,
It wants to be something good, and it wants to be something that will logically turn into...
It's hamstrung by...
Older Sheldon, who is a pain.
By its inevitable path,
So, like, he only can get worse from this point. And so,
We also watched Me, Myself, and I.
Why don't you tell people about Me, Myself, and I?
So the premise of this show is that it's about one guy over three periods of his life. So we basically see him at like 15, 45, and 65 or something. Is that right?
Sure, whatever.
Yeah. And of course, it's set up in a parallel way so that the thing that, you know, modern day guy who's played by Bobby Moynihan is coping with mirrors a thing that he dealt with as a kid by, I don't know who that actor is, and then that he'll deal with again later as a retiree played by John Larroquette, which is not a terrible concept. I imagine it's been done on TV before, but I'm not enough of a historian to know when it's been done, that we follow one character through multiple ages in a parallel show. I do remember that Showtime show called Fast Forward. Do you remember this?
Nope.
It was about a group of friends. There was a gay character played by Garrett Hedlund, which is why we wrote about it for The Advocate.
Garrett Hedlund played a gay character on some show?
Wait, not Garrett Hedlund. Somebody who I was confused for Garrett Hedlund.
What was the name of the show?
I think it was called Fast Forward. And it was about this group of friends, and it was set... both, like, when they were in college, which was like 15 or 20 years earlier, and then the modern day, and then in the future. And it was sort of the same thing, where they would kind of deal with sort of parallel issues at the same time.
Oh, look, I just pulled it up here.
Anyway, this, it's not that the premise is so terrible, but the writing is very kind of whatever. I wasn't amused by the show. And again, this
Flash
is...
Flash Forward?
Flash Forward, okay.
Is that what it was called?
Maybe.
No,
that's another show.
Something else.
Yeah. Anyway, You know, this is one of those shows, we do this periodically where we will ask listeners, hey, if you're watching this show and 4 or 5 episodes from now, it really starts finding its voice or getting good or whatever, let us know. Because I know a lot of times a pilot isn't necessarily the last word on a show, and sometimes they need to, you know, figure out where they're going to go and what they're going to be. But based on this, I'm kind of done.
Tell Alonzo all about that. Because they have already worn out their welcome.
Fair enough.
With being as emotionally wet as a thing can be. Like, in a way that makes me recoil.
Right.
You know, there is so much brazen grabbing for your emotions.
Yeah.
That I don't care anymore. And I don't care how good it gets. They've ruined themselves for me.
And it is gimmicky, not in the setup, but just in the sort of the character banter and the kind of situations.
There's nothing funny about it.
Yeah, it all just feels very funny. It feels just kind of familiar.
Young Sheldon has funny stuff in it.
Yeah.
You know, Kevin Conway has funny Leah Remini, you know, zingers.
Yeah.
This show does not have a thing.
Nope. And then I started watching both Marvel's The Inhumans and Star Trek Discovery, and I made it about 20 minutes in both of them. In the case of Star Trek, I know a lot of people are really digging it.
I'm going to wait.
I am not a Star Trek person, and I like the movies okay, but I've never really followed any of the shows. And watching this one, I was like, oh yeah, this is that show, and this is that show that I've never liked, and I don't like it now. But apparently, again, my Facebook wall, it's either great or terrible. Like, no one is lukewarm about this if they're an actual Star Trek person. Right. Right. They're either super on board or hating it. And then Marvel's The Inhumans just looks crappy, and they hired the Iron Fist guy to be a showrunner, which, like, what were they thinking on that one? And it just, it's that kind of thing where when you see costumes or hair choices that look really cool in a comic book, but then become ridiculous when you portray them in real life. There's a lot of that in this show. So
I looked up from the table. I saw what you were watching. I saw the people all wandering through in their ornate costumes and wacky hair. And I said, good afternoon. Do the BIM.
Yeah.
Because that's what it looks like.
Yeah, the crowd scenes have that look of like a really crappy, like, sort of sword and sorcery movie you'd see on Mystery Science Theater. Yeah, I'm not down. And the advance hype on this was terrible. Like, people have been hating the show for months because they actually debuted this 2-hour pilot as an IMAX thing in theaters, and people were really dumping on that. So I can only imagine how junky it looked that big, because it looked terrible on my screen.
I'm going to wait for Star Trek.
Okay.
Because we sure as hell are not paying to watch it with another subscription to another streaming thing.
Yeah. Because we got too many of those already.
Holy cow.
And we haven't even cut the cord.
And the, but I did, here's, because of the bubble I keep myself in of not knowing things before they happen. I had no idea Michelle Yeoh was the star of the show.
Yep.
And I sure do love that Michelle Yeoh. So when it happens, when you can finally get it all at once on a Blu-ray or something.
I think it eventually is going to go to Netflix or something.
I'll watch it then.
Okay.
Yeah, I can wait.
I mean, I was initially excited about this one because a friend of the show, Brian Fuller, was going to be one of the main drivers behind it. And then he kind of had a parting of the ways with them. Although, if you watch the pilot, he's listed as an executive producer,
yep,
a co-creator, yep, a co-writer of the pilot. Like, his name...
Story by.
Yeah, his name, yep, is in the credits like 3 or 4 times. But, yeah, that if that's the case, that's going to be all front-loaded because he left pretty early on.
Right. Okay, so that's what we got for television.
That's it? That's everything?
Got a couple letters.
Okay, let's have them.
This is from Kelsey. Is there a story behind y'all not having watched The Wire? No.
No, it's just we just haven't gotten around to it.
It's on the list of things to do with television.
Yeah, I know we need to. It's just a thing where there's always some new show that I gotta watch for What the Flick or for this show or whatever. And so the luxury of getting to however many seasons that was to like dive back into it is just like, one day.
I hate to be a cliche about it, but I do really believe everyone should see it. It was worth every second of my time.
That is the unanimous verdict on that show.
You know what we should do?
What should we do, Dave?
Well, we are currently watching The Deuce.
Yes.
After season one of The Deuce is over, let's just continue and watch season one of The Wire. Just season one.
Right, but you make it, you say that as though there isn't going to be something following The Deuce that will also be taking up
our
time.
There might be.
I'm down to try. I'm not willfully ignoring The Wire or avoiding The Wire. Right. I just don't have time for The Wire. But I'll get to it, I promise.
Continuing. I'm watching The Orville
and
semi-enjoying the spirit of Star Trek that it aims to bring back to broadcast TV. I only say semi-enjoying because it always takes the first 2 to 3 episodes of a series for them to find their sea legs, in my opinion. But it's really fine so far and has a lot more Trekishness to it than the new films have. I love Chris Pine, but not the Star Warsization of the reboots. Anyway, I'll report back to y'all in a couple of months with a status update on the quality.
Yeah, please do. I mean, I
really do like it when people go out and watch a thing that we started watching and then decided we didn't want to watch and then come back and tell us.
Sure.
I really like that.
And frankly, you know, I'm not the best judge of a show's Trekishness. And so that it could be that they're getting it completely right, but because I'm not a Star Trek fan, that didn't appeal to me. But yeah, if it's working for you, let us know.
Well, this isn't a letter as much as it's a comment on Patreon from Kat. Takeaway from this episode equals I have so much love for you two.
Oh, thanks.
Thank you. Clint says, oh, last week we talked about Mel B's divorce.
Yes.
In the weekly segment about what I learned from Wendy Williams that week. Clint says, I found your show via the Comedy Couch podcast. And on that podcast, Tony revealed Mel B and her husband's love of three-ways.
It all comes full circle. Yeah, then.
I didn't realize that Tony had revealed Mel B's love of three-ways on the Comedy Couch.
I guess she liked a zig-a-zig ah.
You know, it's a charming and wholesome pastime.
Why not?
The three-way.
If it's three consenting adults,
everyone's having a good time, great. Yeah. Poor Mel B.
I know.
That whole house is under siege.
maybe Wendy needs to give her some tips.
Oh, God, no. Because the thing is that, you know, Mel B's situation is not, like, organized and contained.
Right.
The way Wendy's is. It's Mel B's situation is a hot mess.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, we're done.
All right.
That is the end of this podcast.
Happy International Podcast Day, everybody. Again, our main show, if you have not heard it before, is Linoleum Knife, a podcast of the cinema. And that one is free every week and available on iTunes and on Stitcher and Podbean and CastBox and all the places that you probably get your podcasts on. And then if you are a subscriber to our Patreon page, patreon.com/linoleumknife, you get this show, LKTV, and you can get Linoleum Knife and Fork, which is a podcast about food hosted by two film critics. Or you can get Linoleum Nights, which we do live on Facebook, and we use swear words and talk about controversial subject matter. There's also lots of other fun prizes, so check out our Patreon page to find out about that. You can also subscribe to my other show, Who Shot Ya? It's part of the Maximum Fun Network, and that's also ideally available where all the podcasts live. And we hope you enjoyed this episode. We hope you're enjoying your International Podcast Day. Go out and hug a podcaster? Give them money? Something?
Don't hug me.
Okay, just join our Patreon. That's how you can really let us know that you're marking the spirit of International Podcast Day. All right, until next time. Goodbye.